This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. How confident are you that you'll have enough money saved to live comfortably throughout your retirement years? Recent surveys show most American workers say they're not confident. And more disheartening, most workers have no real idea of how much money they're going to need by the time they do retire. And joining us to discuss steps we can all take to build up our retirement savings are Johnson Investment Counsel portfolio managers and certified financial analysts Scott Wyckoff and Chad Maggard, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Scott, as we heard in that first part of the show, Teresa Ghilarducci points out there are many people who are ill-prepared for retirement. A lot have less than $30,000 in their accounts, and some have nothing at all. As she points out, it's a crisis. So what are your thoughts on what you had to say?
I would definitely agree there are a lot of people out there with not enough savings, and even more concerning, not a plan, no plan in place, sort of that procrastination that has gone on for a long time in some cases and is maybe now catching up to people. So it's definitely true that there's a great need for education in this area. There's a great need for people to take it seriously and realize that, you know, we all do grow up, and at times some people realize that too late, unfortunately. But acting now, regardless of your age or your station or your financial situation, doing something now is going to help versus delaying.
What do you think of the idea of the guaranteed retirement account? I mean, is that the answer to the problem?
I think that personal responsibility in this case is huge, because you know your own financial situation best. You know your personality the best. You know the potential for your future the best. And so much of financial planning is specific to the individual. And so I don't disagree that action is needed. I would just encourage people to not wait for things to happen or things to fall in place, but to take that responsibility upon yourself and to gather friends, family, advisors around you to give you good advice. But personally, it's going to come down to your decision-making and your action.
Mm-hmm. I would add to that, too. I think it's really important today to get a plan in place so that you can understand the numbers around your retirement plan, so that if I'm 40 years old today and I have a sense for what my retirement budget will be, this is how much I need to save between now and age 65, so that I can either have peace of mind that I'm doing all the right things, or that I can then put an action plan in place if there is a shortfall that may occur down the road.
Chad, what kind of benchmark do you use as far as when people say, how much do I need to save? I think Teresa used 8 times your income was the number that she put out there. What kind of benchmark are you using?
Yeah, so what we like to look at is the value of someone's portfolio when they retire, and then looking at what we would consider to be a safe withdrawal rate from that portfolio value. We typically use a percentage of 3 to 4 based on a retirement portfolio value. So 3 to 4% of the portfolio value is what would be a safe withdrawal rate typically for someone that's 65 years old and thinks that they're probably going to live 30 years in retirement. So that would be what we would consider a sustainable withdrawal rate.
The key here is figuring out what are your sources of income going to be when you stop working, either when you want to stop working or when you have no choice and you have to stop working. So for each individual, it could be different. But in terms of saving, a good place to start is as much as possible right away.
Save till it hurts.
Yes.
Really, yes.
Save till it hurts.
Start saving yesterday.
That's not what I want to hear, though.
Right.
I want to hear what's the easy answer.
That really accomplishes, though, 2 things. One thing is you start piling money into your nest egg so that it can grow and support you later down the road. But it also reduces your lifestyle now, and you get used to living on a lower amount. The problem in America and other places in the world is we spend almost every dime that we receive, or we spend more than we receive, and we're going backwards. People need to learn to live on less than what they bring in, save that difference, and then again, it reduces your expectations for what you will live off of after the paychecks stop coming.
Yeah. Not only that, but one of our guests a few months ago admonished me when I brought out the dreaded B word, budget, and she. It, And she said, you know, really, don't think of a budget because that conjures up all sorts of really hard, unpleasant things. But have a spending plan. And if you are have a significant other, make sure that both parties or all parties to the spending plan have input into it and have an honest discussion about how much do you really need, and work backward from there. So if that number is it's $3,000 a month, if that's the number, then you have to work backward. If you have no other sources of income, and I'm using that, there's a sneaky reason I'm using that, because there's a big school of thought that says that a sustainable withdrawal rate from a portfolio, not what it's going to earn, but a sustainable withdrawal rate is around 3.6%. It happens to be a nice round number. For every $1 million you have, that's $36,000 a year. That's $3,000 a month. So if you work backward from that and say, that's how much I need, well, if Social Security is paying you half of that, then you only need $500,000 to save. It's just a good rule of thumb. But it's worthless unless you sit down and say, and figure out how much you need. Ask yourself, is the house going to be paid off or not? Do we need three cars or not? Do we need two boats or not? Do we need to travel, every month or not? And so it's making those decisions before you get there that are so important. And once you have that number, it's the single most important number in any financial plan. It's having that spending number down. And it's different for everybody. There are some people who they really do. Their lifestyles are built around five figures a month. And there are other people who don't need much money. There are some people who just don't need much money and they prefer it that way. So it's personal, as you mentioned, Scott. It's very personal and it's different for everybody. But when you get that, then you work backward from that number.
Chris, as a benchmark, I've heard the one thing being that you need $1 million saved for retirement. And if you're a married couple, you need $2 million. Is that close to true or is that just too...
Depends on how much you spend. You know, if you are off the grid and you have solar batteries and you have your own well and you grow your own food and your house is paid off, you probably don't need that.
Okay.
You don't. Mm-hmm. The problem with rules of thumb is that they don't fit. It that assumes that one size fits all, and it just doesn't. For anyone who's been in this field any length of time, rules of thumb are good to give you a real quick sense of if someone's in the ballpark or not. But just like, here we are, it's March 18th, the day after St. Patty's Day. We're at NCAA basketball tournaments going on. Just because you're in the arena doesn't mean you're in the best seat. Every seat has a slightly different view, and every financial plan has a slightly different angle or facet that retirees need to consider.
One way we see that bear out in some cases is with high earners, high wage earners. They accumulate what to most people sounds like a lot of money. However, when you look at it, and some of these high earners are used to spending X amount, even a high number, I'm just throwing something out there, of $5 million or something like that. If you spend $500,000 a year, if you spend $1 million a year, that's going to last you 5 to 10 years if you don't earn anything on it. And so that would be an example of the other end of the spectrum where there are people where $1 million might be more than they'll ever have and more than they'll ever need. But there might be people where some really large absolute numbers, it's not going to cut it because they're used to spending so much.
Yeah.
So part of your retirement planning should be thinking about things that – how can I downsize? How can I spend less? That should be part of the whole picture, right?
Yeah.
Not just thinking about how much money can I have.
Right. Exactly. So much of retirement is non-monetary. And what I mean by that is what's your life going to look like? What are you going to do? What's going to make you happy? And where are you going to be living? Those sorts of things, and it, obviously the finances are a huge part of it, and that's what we're talking about. But getting used to a certain lifestyle that's going to work is a big deal. And so, I don't know if this is commonly known, but we know that the highest rate of suicide is men 55 and older because that time of retiring is so stressful in so many ways, and then there's that loss of sense of purpose. And so it's just there's so much stress during that time. And so controlling what you can control in advance is huge. And two of those things are your saving and your spending habits.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Charlie in Hyde Park. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. Hey, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Go right ahead.
I have a question or a comment about Social Security. Your last guest talked about increasing or taxing incomes above, I think it was $118,000 to make Social Security solvent. My question is, why not, instead of taxing, why not means test Social Security so that people that don't need it in retirement don't have to get it or don't get it? But the person that has worked 30 years at a low-income job but still has worked 30 years gets that and maybe a little bit more. It seems to me that the less we tax, the better off the economy is, but it would still make Social Security solvent unless those numbers don't add up.
Okay.
Well, that's a thanks for calling, Charlie. It's an interesting thought. You know, Social Security, it's been around now since, 81 years. 81 years. And think about when it was created, they were using data from the 1930 census. You know what the average life expectancy was?
66.
Actually, I have this chart, so I'm not really all that smart, but I have these numbers memorized. It was 58 for men and 60 for women.
50, okay, so.
Right. And
they weren't expecting you to be in the system that long.
Exactly. And at that time, the age for full retirement was set at 65. So that tells you what the initial intent was. It was not changed in any way, shape, or form until recently. And now, even though life expectancies have been extended by 20 years, the age for full retirement has only been extended by 2. And so the Wall Street Journal did a study a number of years ago about how to ensure the solvency, at least of the retirement piece. And 2 tweaks were enough. And the tweaks involved raising the cap from 118 to taxing all income. And the other one was pushing out the age for full retirement for people newly entering the workforce. Because remember, it's all demographics. The millennial generation is actually bigger than the baby boom. And so there really are all these people entering the workforce. They really are coming in. And so it's easy to say, well, let's means test it. I mean, these are things that our politicians, God love them, will be fussing over, arguing over for a long time.
Yeah, there is an argument there because some people would say, well, means testing makes sense. People who don't need the money, they shouldn't be in the system, but they've been paying into the system.
They
so
have,
there's
right?
the argument that they should be getting that back.
Remember what the initials FICA stand for. So when you get your paycheck and you see FICA, it stands for the Federal Insurance Contributions Act. And so if you pass away before you retire, before you file a retirement claim, all that money that you put in, guess what? If you pass away, have no survivors, it's poof. It's gone, mm-hmm. except for $255. That's it.
So what do you think the idea that Teresa threw out there as well, she's not the first person I've heard this from, the idea of delaying taking Social Security as long as you possibly can to increase your monthly payout. It sounds like a good strategy, but how practical is it really?
Well, I think if someone can afford to do it and delay taking it until age 70 from their full retirement age, say at age 66, then the numbers work out pretty well because you get a guaranteed 8% increase from age
per year
from age 66 to age 70. So if you can bridge that gap, assuming you've retired at age 66, if you can bridge that gap with your portfolio or other income sources, that can be a real benefit down the road to have that guaranteed increase of 32% over a period of 4 years. And when we incorporate that into the financial projections that we run, it typically improves the outcome for the projections we run for our clients.
And a lot of people ask us, well, Social Security is broken. It's not going to last. So I'm just going to get it now. And even if they're not 66 yet, which is for people, most people near or in retirement is full retirement age. But what we typically say is that while changes are to be expected, for sure, we don't know what they are yet. There were tweaks made late last year to the program.
Oh, yes.
That changes are going to happen. We feel like most people that are in or nearing retirement are probably going to be grandfathered in many ways, and that the younger generations will probably feel more of it. However, if you're planning on Social Security being your one and only source of retirement income security, we would encourage people to look beyond that, look for ways beyond that, i.e. stashing away your own nest egg and not fully depending on Social Security, because it is uncertain what it will look like.
Well, and the other thing, Scott, is it's not something that you wait until just a few months before to start planning how it fits into the whole picture. I mean, people need to be planning for how Social Security is going to be part of the whole equation several years, I would think, before they get to that point.
Exactly.
Either on your own or with a financial advisor. Mm-hmm. But you have to start that well in advance. We had a guest on a long time ago, well, last year.
Seems like a long time.
It does. Lawrence Kotlikoff, who's a professor, yes, who's written a book on Social Security and the Social Security system called Get What's Yours. And it describes that. And generally, if longevity runs in your family and if you are reasonably healthy, there's that crossover point. I think it's around 82 or 83 mm-hmm. years old mm-hmm. where it makes sense to delay and get that bigger number, because that 8% per year increase is compounded. Mm-hmm. Plus, it doesn't even that's the minimum. If there is a cost of living adjustment mm-hmm. of 1% or 2%, then you get the 8 plus the 2.
Yep.
So it's more than meets the eye. And if longevity runs in your family, or if your spouse is younger than you and may be needing those survivor benefits for a long period of time, then it really makes sense to drive that number higher if you possibly can.
Yeah. And I would add one thing. There's been a prevalence of calculators out there related to Social Security benefits, so that if a worker goes out that's 10 years away from retirement, they can pull their benefit statement from the Social Security website. It has
SSA.gov.
SSA.gov, thank you. And it has a line-by-line history of your earnings history, which you can then plug into the Social Security calculators that are out there. And it'll give you a sense for the total value of my Social Security benefits if I take them at age 62 versus full retirement age if that's 66, or delaying until age 70. So that's a nice, helpful way to put things into context and how it fits in your financial plan.
One last thing. I feel like Bernie Sanders here waving my finger. This is radio. So
we can see you.
Yeah. But the important thing is that if you go to the Social Security Administration's website, which is ssa.gov, do it in the morning when you're nice and relaxed, because in order to establish a username and password, they'll ask you some questions that you will just wonder where this information came from, about addresses you may have occupied 10, 15, 20 years ago, or the color of a car that you owned. So just don't be in a hurry to rush through it.
That's all identity, protect you from identity theft.
Because you'll get booted out, and then you have to go there in person to get it.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Greg in Sycamore Township. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I just wanted to mention one thing about the home ownership, paying off your house. And if you're planning to live there for another 20 years, you might also want to include things you might have to do to it, like you have to get a new roof or new appliances.
Property taxes are going to go up.
Yeah, remodel your kitchen or a driveway or heating and cooling system. I mean, those can all add up, and if you plan to live there for another 20 years, you might very well have to do those things. So I just wanted to add that in.
Thanks, Greg.
Good point.
It's all part of the equation.
That's a great point. And what people often forget is, let's say, for example, you retire at 65. We project for most people age 95. So that's 30 years. So think about how many house repairs. Think about how many cars you might go through. All of these different things that continue to be needed.
Not to mention, as you age,
build those,
Scott,
into
you've
got to
make the house livable for yourself as you age.
That's exactly right. And so not forgetting those types of expenses, and Chris talked about it already, the idea of budgeting. In our experience, about 5% of people actually have a written budget. But if you, let's say you
spending
don't.
Spending plan.
Most people don't want to sit down at the computer and make up a spreadsheet. But having accounts set up, for a lot of people, it ends up being a car fund. Set up a little car fund that you kick in $100, $200, $300 a month or something like that, so that when your car breaks down, you're not left panicking. How am I going to pay for this next car? or be forced to take out a loan, take on more debt, which you're going backwards again.
Yeah. And another point also is to ask, you know, do you have, if you have children, where do they live? Are they in the area or are they scattered on either coast? And what's going to happen to that house? Because we've kind of all grown up in this career and Ives mindset where when we're gone, the house will somehow stay in the family, and that, that wonderful roll top desk that you've had for that came from your grandparents, somehow your kids are going to want it. You should ask them before you, right. you start making plans, because chances are that they might not want it. And you're paying essentially to heat a house and to store stuff that no one's going to want. And so it's not a bad idea to kind of start uncluttering or decluttering now. There are people who might need those five extra winter coats that you've been saving for somebody. They might need those now. So it's a good idea to start downsizing a little bit. Just because you're downsizing the physical space doesn't mean that your quality of life is being downsized. It's just less stuff to take care of.
And what we often run into is people that, quote unquote, want to downsize. What that often ends up looking like, unfortunately, is a smaller house that costs the same and or more because it's nicer. So if you're thinking about downsizing, get a smaller house that costs less.
Make
not
sure
just
it's actually downsizing. We'll continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss steps we can all take to build up our retirement savings are Johnson Investment Counsel portfolio managers and certified financial analysts Scott Wyckoff and Chad Maggard, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Scott, you were talking earlier about the sooner you start, the better, that kind of whole notion. So I need some help with this one. How do I convince my sons who are in their 20s that they need to start really doing this big time? I mean, yeah. I keep hearing, oh, I got plenty of time.
Downsize. Get a smaller house.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
Here's how you can show them. If you start at age 25, the percent of your salary that you need to put away is significantly lower than if you wait to age 30, 35, 40. And heaven forbid you're waiting till 45 or 50 and then you start. I mean, you're talking about more than half of your income needs to be socked away to even try and match what you would have had if you started at 25 at, let's call it, 10, 15% of your salary. So the power of compounding, which is return upon return, even with market fluctuation, that's all part of the process. It's so powerful.
Yeah, and one thing that we've noticed with millennials is that they become much more engaged if you put things in terms of from now to the next 5 years rather than looking out 30 or 40 years into retirement. You know, make the points that Scott makes around starting now is better, but not necessarily projecting out 40 years and showing them numbers related to that. Make Scott's point, then say you need to put $5,000 away this year for retirement, or you need to put X dollars away toward your student loans. Put things in shorter-term achievable goals to keep them more engaged.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Bill in Union, Kentucky. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I have a comment to make about your panelists, you know, and their advice to hold off taking your Social Security. Now, I realize that that's pretty common advice.
Yeah, it is.
You get from most financial advisors, but I think there's an if and or a but to that. And let me explain it. Let's say that you took that money and invested it. In other words, you got to consider the time value of money. If you took the money at age 62 and invested it, I think it comes out to be 7 or 8% to where you break even on what you would have got from Social Security, and you're not risking dying and getting nothing. You know, they never take into account the risk of someone dying. I recently had a family member who passed away at age a little after age 62 before he got his Social Security, and he's getting nothing.
Yeah. Well, and Bill, those are good comments. The point is that actually every financial plan is personal, and what might be a good idea for some people is a horrible idea for someone else. And so most advisors we know, we work with locally and nationally, really, I mean, I'm not aware of any rule of thumbs. There are some people who take the retirement early and they invest it and they're good and they're disciplined and they have a process and that works fine, especially if they are not especially healthy. But if they, again, it depends on whether they're married. It depends on the spread, the age spread between the person filing the Social Security claim and their spouse and the and all the other resources. So it's just impossible in a radio advice show to render advice that's specific. So it might be a great idea for some people, but there are so many variables.
It goes back to what you were saying, Chris. It's kind of a rule of thumb kind of thing, mm-hmm. but it may or may not apply to all situations.
It may not, because there are some people for whom that income is not a big deal. They're fine without the Social Security, and it's just mad money for them. And for some people,
other people wouldn't just start using it right away.
And another thing is, if you file before your full retirement age and you still want to work, you have to remember that you can't make that much more. It's around $15,800, or it's a low number. But if you make more than a nominal amount, then you're not going to get all that Social Security right away. It's delayed. So there are a lot of factors that go into it. But that's a good point, Charlie. Thanks for calling.
Let's talk with Jack in Loveland. Good afternoon, Jack.
Good afternoon. And my question was for someone that may have started drawing Social Security primarily during the economic downturn a few years ago. Can you stop, and has subsequently re-entered the job market, can you stop Social Security? And if you do so, what are the benefits or potential pitfalls of that?
You have 12 months after you file to, quote-unquote, take it back. And then what the Social Security Administration does is they recoup those benefits. But if it's more than a year, I think in most cases, you're sort of locked in. Like with so many programs, details really matter, ages, amounts, et cetera. So I would encourage you to contact somebody in your situation just to make sure there's nothing that you can do to undo that.
Let's talk with Tyler in Westchester. Hi, Tyler.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I was calling with a statement, and possibly just to make sure my college professor was right, to try to get us started on savings back then. He told us between the age of 25 and 65, which is 40 years, if you can save $5,000 a year, you'll have an input of $200,000. But because of compounding, no matter what the interest rates are, you'll end up being a millionaire by the time you retire at 65. Is this true? And if so, it could possibly help your kids that are 20 right now.
Yeah,
he's giving me
really
that
matters
argument.
Thanks,
Tyler.
It really matters what that interest rate is, and so this speaks to the impact of market returns, which no one can control. So that's why you want to control the elements that you can control, which is the saving aspect. But if markets cooperate, things can work out really, really swell, like it has for people who have been in the capital markets for the last 30, 40 years. It's been a great time to be an investor. If returns are lower going forward, then the numbers aren't going to be as nice.
And I think the other thing to consider is that if you're looking 40 years out, $1 million is not going to buy what it can buy today, and it would buy significantly less than what $1 million will buy today, probably half or less of what.
Yeah, and one other very important concept is that there's a huge difference between the accumulation side and the distribution side. And so as you are piling this money up, the volatility is your friend, because if you continue to save money, when we were here in February, the market was down about 10%. The S&P 500 was 10% lower year to date at that time. We're now actually yesterday on St. Patrick's Day climbed back into a wee bit into the plus column. So if you didn't panic and you kept buying, you kept making your deposits, then you bought some good stuff cheaper. But when you are on the flip side of that and you're distributing money, you're taking cash, then you have to really do everything you can to ratchet down the volatility so that you have a more predictable income stream and you're not liquidating shares at a lower price.
And that also lends itself to being flexible when you're in retirement. If the markets aren't cooperating and it's a stressful time and markets are down, if you're able to hold off on taking money out of the portfolio, that's a good idea. And so the people that can be build in and be flexible in retirement, that will increase chances of success over time.
So. Well, that's a good point. Just because you hit retirement years doesn't mean that your plan's set in stone. It's something that you can be flexible with and adjust as you need to. Alice sent us an email, Chris. This sounds like this is a Chris question. She said she wanted to know where the best place to find out how to put together a spending plan is.
Well, there are a number of really good books on financial planning, but the best place to start is with your own checkbook or however you pay your bills. Go through your banking statement if you do it online, or go through your checkbook and say, okay, here's what I pay for housing. Here's what I'm really spending on food. Not what I like to spend, but here's what I'm doing now. So it's very important to have an idea of what your current level of spending is. And without that, you won't know where it should be. So the first step is self-assessment and understand. So the first book to buy is really not one to buy, but to look at your checkbook and see how you're spending money now. And then be honest with yourself. Ask, how much do you really need? And because the two numbers might not match up. And that's the best way to do it, to come up with a spending plan. How much do you really need? But you have to start with your own checkbook.
Okay, so is that the advice? That's the advice. The only book you need is your checkbook at this point.
Okay. One thing I would add is to really challenge yourself on what a want is and a need is.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing, is people that classify a want as a need tend to have a harder time saving.
That's a great point. Well, Chad, Scott, and Chris, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. You're welcome. Thank you.
Johnson Investment Counsel portfolio managers and certified financial analysts Scott Wyckoff and Chad Maggard, and Chris DeSimeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. As a reminder, the information provided on today's show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situations.